You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, cheery chipper chums and chats.
Oh my gosh.
Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 6, and of course, I am your humble host, Karen, and along with me are our ready, gleeful, and gregarious gang of co-host contestants.
Flaked out on the last two words.
Group? I'm running out of...
It's poetic license.
You could have said group, maybe.
Group, yeah.
Yeah, gregarious gang. Group, gang.
Gang's not
gaggle.
Bad.
Yeah.
The wheels.
Oh,
the
gaggle.
Wheels.
Gaggle.
Yeah.
Gaggle.
Yeah, giggling gaggle of...
Oh, now I'm being judged.
Yeah. That's why I'm here.
That's hard.
Yeah.
Today we have...
I'm Colin.
Dana.
And also we have an amazing special guest today. You might have seen him on the big screen in the documentary Wordplay, and a 5-time champion winner of the American Crossword Puzzle Tournament and crossword puzzle creator, Tyler Hinman.
Hello. Great to be here.
Yay.
Hey.
The word expert.
Oh,
now we actually have a real expert in the house.
A bona fide expert.
Burn on Colin.
At least in crosswords. If it's under 6 letters, I'm golden.
I know.
And I guess you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to figure out that the topic of the week is going to be on words and crosswords and all of that stuff. So word nerds rejoice. But I do have a quick starter question, and I came across this via Twitter, actually. So a lot of celebrities, they have fan groups, and they have names for their fan groups,
right.
And some of them sound pretty dumb.
Right.
I mean, they do.
Lady Gaga has her Little Monsters, which, you know, that seems very fitting. There's also Justin Bieber fans are Beliebers.
The Beliebers.
Yeah. For better or worse.
Right. Yeah.
Beliebers.
Now, they came up with that themselves, right?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if, like, these are fed.
Yeah. Or media creation.
It's like grassroots, I think.
They're like jokes. You never really know where they
Twihards
come from.
Twihards.
Right.
Twihards, yeah.
Beliebers belong to all of us.
Believe. There's also a Prince Harry has Harry Chasers.
Yeah,
that one sounds a little.
It makes me cringe. It sounds so dirty. The Harry Chasers. Those are
worst,
those are
worst bar drink.
Harry. Being Harry and a Harry Chaser.
So I'm thinking, like, you know, what if we had famous historical figures? What would their fan group names be if you know it exists, right? The stupid one I came up with is one of my heroes, because I'm a math nerd, Benoit Mandelbrot of the Mandelbrot fractal.
Sure, of course. Sure.
Household name.
Oh, Mandelbrot fractal. Yeah.
Mandelbros.
Nice.
That's good.
Or if they're females, they can be fractalettes.
Yeah.
So
I am crushing this fractal.
Yo, dude. Yo, bra. Hey, bra. It's Mandelbros, man. Mandelbra.
Mandelbros for life.
I've always been more of a Sierpinski guy.
Ooh, I know Sierpinski as well. His triangle and his carpet.
Yes, indeed.
Words, people. Keep it to words.
So what about you guys? Do you guys have any historical fan group names that's equally as dumb as mine?
Well, this is pretty bad. Like, if you're a fan of Thomas Edison, I know we talked about him before and how he was a butt Edison, but they could be like Edheads.
Edheads. I went for the just like the pun angle. All I could think of is like Eiffel, you know, Eiffel. If you're a fan of Eiffel, you could be the Eiffelutans.
Oh, good.
Oh, that is cool. I gotta follow that.
Yeah.
I got a few here. If you're a fan of St. Paul's Cathedral and the architecture thereof, you'd be a Christopher Renthusiast.
Oh, Renthusiast. That's
and,
good.
If you are a defender of an accused Soviet spy, you'd be an Algar aficionado.
Oh, my God.
And, of course,
so nerdy. I love it.
Those who enjoy the work of a 19th century French author take their cue from the 16th century French Protestants and call themselves the Hugo Nuts.
Hugo Nuts. I feel like that's something. It
should
be something.
Yeah.
Go get that.
Hugo Nuts for the Hugo Nuts.
Yeah. Is HugoNuts.com taken? We'll check that out.
Hugo Nuts for Hugo Nuts. Oh, marketing. So good. All right. Here we go. Let's start the show with our general trivia segment, which is Pop Quiz Hotshot. All right. Everybody get your barnyard buzzers ready.
Here we go.
All right.
And the first question, Blue Wedge. What state is home to Mall of America? Oh, that was Tyler.
I believe that would be Minnesota.
Correct.
Yep. On the board.
I've been
Mall
there.
Of America calls itself a city within a city.
It's nuts. I mean, and like, you know, the, when the weather's inclement, you could literally spend your entire day in there.
I bet people
really?
Do.
Oh, well, yeah. I bet people oh, yeah. you can. Man, that's a, I don't know if that's a great day yeah, or a horrible day. Pink Wedge, name three of the four types of cars mentioned in Blondie's Rapture.
Oh.
I will just place my buzzer down on it.
Man, I'm just trying to run through it in my mind right now. Okay, Fab Five Freddy.
You can sing out the song
I
if you want.
I'm not going to embarrass all of us.
No,
I'm not going to embarrass
it.
All of
us. We can edit
it's
it
fine.
Out.
It's goes out I won't be embarrassed, Colin.
Eats up cars. I cannot remember them.
It is Cadillac, Lincoln, Mercury, and Subaru.
Subaru. Wow. Okay.
Were those cars those.
That's a good one. We only need three out of the four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yellow Wedge. What human rights organization was founded in 1961 after two students were imprisoned for 7 years for drinking a toast to justice? Colin.
Was it Amnesty International?
Correct.
Very nice. Mm.
And we have Purple Wedge.
All right.
What Italian author claims to have a personal library of 50,000 books?
Italian author.
Colin.
Calvino.
Incorrect. Any takers?
Machiavelli?
Incorrect. Tyler.
I will name an Italian author. Dante.
Incorrect.
Oh,
it is Umberto Eco.
Oh, the other one.
That is real. That is particularly embarrassing because he is in crosswords all the time.
All the time because of his last name.
I am shamefaced.
C-O.
That fact does not come up, however.
Okay.
Well, now you can write a new clue.
There you go.
Yeah. Green Wedge Science. In what part of your body might the nurse hear crackles, Ronki, or Strider? And I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce Ronki. It is spelled R-H-O-N-C-H-I. Tyler?
Yeah. It sounds like bronchi, so I'm going to say the lungs.
Correct.
Hey. Oh,
yeah,
nice.
Good bit of deduction
there. Yeah, I was going to say,
based on the crackles. Redemption.
Good job, brain.
Good job, brain.
Orange Wedge Sports.
Yes.
Where did NFL quarterback Jim McMahon play college football?
Oh.
Colin.
Was it Miami?
Incorrect.
Mm.
The only McMahon I know are wrestling McMahon.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking about, too.
The dude from Public
Affairs.
I don't
know where they
played football.
College football.
It's a religious school.
Guessing Notre Dame?
Incorrect.
Loyola?
No. It's a big religious school. Oh, you guys.
Yeah.
It is a Brigham Young.
BYU.
Oh, yeah. BYU.
Of course.
Dope.
And we also have our Kickstarter backer questions as well. First one is from Mr. Todd Companion from Silver Spring, Maryland. And his question is, what is the fundamental basis of the metric system? As in, what are all those units like meter, gram, and liters derived from?
I don't suppose it's 10.
You know, that would be my guess because it's, you know, decimal based on 10, but it is not. Think bigger.
Okay. 100.
Well, I mean, I don't know if this is what he's getting at, but aren't they based on fundamental, like, wavelengths of frequencies of light under certain temperatures and conditions?
You are correct.
Okay.
It is the speed of light and water, because light defines the length, and therefore volume, fixed volume of water defines mass.
Right. And I believe that before that, they were based on set, there were rods. There were, like, official reference rods of metal that lived in the standards office, and they updated them. I mean,
just
and it was.
A pile?
It was, that's around here somewhere.
These little sticks. And Mr. Todd,
accidental buzz.
Mr. Todd Companion is a standardization nerd, so that's his question.
Nice.
And he's also had many careers, such as in science and education, rocket science, law enforcement, but he feels like he should have become a fireman.
Fantastic.
That was his dream when he was 5.
Awesome.
And
thanks,
our
Todd.
Second Kickstarter question is from Gian Cruz from San Francisco. And this is related to our topic of the week.
Okay.
What is the only word in the English language that is solely derived from Tagalog, the native language of the Philippines?
Ooh, nice.
Only word.
One of those things I feel like I've heard and have not retained.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
I'm just thinking about lumpia. Yeah.
It is boondocks. Ah. And hence boonies, rural areas, Tagalog for boondock, B-U-N-D-O-K, meaning mountain.
I like that. That's a good one.
I like it too.
The interesting fact about Mr. Cruz is that if there was a sport that involved catching food in his mouth from a long distance, he would be the world champion.
Ooh, YouTube.
Oh. Yeah, exactly.
They've already been held on YouTube, I'm pretty sure.
That sounds like a wager, yeah.
Picks or it didn't happen.
You ever seen the Blue Man Group? I
mean... Oh, yeah! That's his new career,
there you go.
Blue Man Group.
I've seriously injured my teeth trying to catch an M&M at distance. Those things. Oh, I mean, you get it like square on the tooth, it can really hurt.
It hurts.
Yeah.
Especially the peanut ones. Ruthless.
Yeah.
All right. Good job, everybody's brains. Segue into our topic of this week, which is words.
Woo-hoo!
10,000 words swarm around my head. 10 million more in books written beneath my bed. I wrote or read them all when searching in the swarm. Still can't find out.
Well, obviously, the topic of words and puzzles and, you know, or of the English language is pretty vast. I'd say it's pretty vast.
Yeah.
So we're choosing.
We're not going to cover it all.
No, not everything.
Aardvark.
We're going to choose some of our favorite subjects, and hopefully we'll maybe do another episode in the future covering other stuff, interesting things about words. And to start it off, I have a quick, weird vocabulary quiz.
Oh, boy.
Oh.
We can buzz, but everybody has to give me an answer.
Okay.
All right.
So almost like round robin.
Multiplay. All
right. Multiplay.
All right.
All right, here we go. Name a non-proper name word that uses two consecutive A's.
Did you just say it? I think I just said one. Yeah.
I will say aardvark.
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 Oh, do we have to come up with
new ones? Yeah, you have to come up with a different one.
I thought, okay, game over. Well done. crap. All right, so another word with two consecutive A's. Wow.
Tyler, you can keep on
going. Can I sweep the board here?
Yeah, right?
Sure. You can go for, yeah, just go two
just
more.
Make it official with the buzz here. Would non be one? The
no.
Okay, non. Nice, nice.
Party.
I believe that's pronounced partay.
Yeah. No, I have consecutive A's in my
party. Other possible answers. In addition to aardvark, there's also aardwolf.
Oh, yeah. Aardwolf.
Yeah.
That sounds cool.
And the plural version, aardwolves. There's also the monetary unit of Finland, which is marka.
Oh, yeah.
The easy one would be ba, as in sheep.
Or A-A-H is a word.
Ah is a word. And even just A-A is a word.
I almost said that one.
Scrabble.
This from Scrabble. And it actually means cindery lava. Mm. And it's Hawaiian. Mm. So a lot of these words are also Hawaiian. Another one. Name another word that uses two consecutive I's.
Skiing.
Correct. Yeah. Any other takers? Tyler?
I will say radii.
Radii, nice. Yes. Also acceptable. Nice, nice. Dana, you're last. This is great for me because I don't have to come up with any of these.
Oh, it's a proper. I'm thinking Hawaii.
Taxiing.
Right.
Name a word that has consecutive U's.
Oh,
damn. We all want the first one.
Yeah.
Vacuum.
Duh.
Vacuum. Colin.
Continuum.
That was
very good.
There goes my second one. And let's see. Equus? No, that's a play.
Ooh.
Yeah. I like it. I like Equus, though. Let's think. There's got to be...
There's some cheater words.
Cheater words? Oh, well...
Okay, so... Ultra,
Moo Moo.
Ultra, Moo Moo. Yes!
Oh, yeah! Under the water.
At the death.
Well done. Well done.
Good job.
Nice. And that has two sets of them, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Double points.
Double points, yeah.
Ultra vacuum is also...
Oh.
Stop.
Yeah,
stop.
That's a little...
Sub vacuum.
Yeah. Moo Moo vacuum.
Three sets.
Which is on the Moo Moo vacuum continuum.
We're just making our own portmanteau words here. I'm gonna,
Okay.
What is that? I want to know more.
That's actually the next question is name me a portmanteau word, which is two words squished together to make a new word. Tyler.
How about smog?
smog, smoke and fog, right?
Yes, indeed.
S'more.
S'more is not. Is it?
I don't know.
Smooth and...
Some more. I don't know.
Some more. Colin?
I've got one related to what we talked about a couple weeks ago, which is electrocution, which was a combination of electrical execution.
Dana.
I'm not sure.
There are plenty, actually. But rockumentary... is a good one.
That's mockumentary, a good one. Too.
Mockumentary,
right.
Brangelina.
Tomcat.
Right, absolutely.
My favorite word has to be, portmanteau word would have to be bodacious.
Oh, yeah.
What?
It's what the turtles say, but it is not. It is bold and audacious.
Ah, okay.
Bodacious.
Yeah.
All right, and our last vocab quiz question. Name me a palindrome word. Palindrome being you can read forward and backwards the same way. Tyler?
How about race car?
Race car, very good. That's my favorite one.
Oh, man.
Come on, you guys.
Pop!
Low-hanging fruit there.
Mom! Dad!
Trying to go for a
sis!
Long one, right?
Those are palindromes. Yes.
Oh, yeah, tot. There, yeah, fine. You get one under the wire.
Cheaters, man.
I was trying to go for, like, the long ones.
You should have put a word counter.
Yeah, I should have put, like a five letters or more.
Well, I was thinking of all the sentence palindromes that I know, and I just kind of blank. Like
kayak, level, rotor.
Yeah. Oh, rotor.
Yeah. My personal favorite one is the fear of palindromes, which is, of course, ibophobia. Spelled A-I.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
That is awesome. So I'm a huge, giant crossword fan. I'm not very good at it. And yeah, I try to solve the New York Times and the Onion ones almost every day. And Tyler here, who is not only a champ in solving them, you also write them.
From time to time, yeah. Mm.
And I actually did some of your puzzles before. And I want to ask you, like, give me a brief history of crossword puzzles.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we're coming up on the 100th anniversary, actually, of the crossword. It was first appeared in December of 1913.
Whoa!
In the New York World.
Is there going to be a party?
There is going to be a book.
Uh-huh. Okay.
An editor named Peter Gordon, who does really good work, is calling out constructors to make just a book for basically tribute to the crossword puzzle on its 100th anniversary.
Cool. That is cool.
I would have guessed it was older, than 100 years, yeah.
Good bar bet there.
Yeah.
100 years. When it came out, was it just kind of like a giant fad that like swept the whole nation, or was it kind of a highbrow?
It was a fad once upon a time. It was a little before my time, but...
100 years ago.
Yeah, I remember reading, like on a train, they would supply dictionaries for travelers who had crossword puzzle books to pass the time. And the train would just supply them with, I guess, cheating material.
I came across, I knew we were going to talk about crosswords, and I came across something, it just seems so funny to me. There was an article about worrying about the panic of, you know, people storming libraries and commandeering dictionaries and encyclopedias just for the purpose of filling in the puzzles. And, you know, the tone
with
of the editorials,
panic of what?
What are we going to do when people who are there to use the library for normal reasons can't have access to these reference books? And
that's awesome to have all these people go to libraries to solve puzzles.
If that's the thing you're complaining about on your op-ed pages, yeah, I know. You've got
they can look 90 years into the future. I think libraries should be happy for the attention.
Yeah, exactly. They'd be happy to be fending people off.
So like when you create a crossword puzzle, like how does it start? I mean, and for a lot of people who aren't big crossword fans, the bigger crossword puzzles, they have 4 or 6 very long clues. And usually they're themed.
Yeah.
They're like kind of a play on words. You work around that. Like, what is your process, Tyler?
Well, first I have to come up with a theme, which for me is kind of the biggest stumbling block for me. It's hard to come up with a theme that you haven't seen before, you know, doing as many puzzles as I've done over the years. And to come up with something you think solvers are going to like and that will work in a grid and will just be entertaining and can be executed well. So if I come up with one of those, you gotta get your theme entries going, because if you weren't aware, all crossword puzzles, you know, in the main markets, almost all of them have 180 degree rotational symmetry.
Right.
So you turn the grid upside down, black squares look exactly the same. So if you have a 10-letter theme answer, you need another 10-letter theme answer.
Right.
And you can have one that's an odd length that can go in the center. But other than that, you need them to pair off somehow. And sometimes that's a stumbling block.
I never noticed that.
The symmetry?
I didn't.
I always noticed it. I didn't know if it was just a convention or if it was, I mean, if there was something in designing the puzzles or solving the puzzles that made it easier.
It's just more beautiful.
It is. It's true.
Is that why? That's the reason. Yeah, it's more attractive and it's just the way it's always been done.
Yeah.
It's a good limitation, though. I feel
absolutely.
Like that is part of the challenge too.
Right. Right.
Because yeah, I can make my own crossword puzzle. It's just gonna take like 6 pages, and it's like all branching out.
Karen, there's
out.
No black squares here. This is...
What is this? And one of the things I want to ask you, Tyler, is like, what are some of the limitations? Like, can you put gross things in your, like you can, you obviously cannot put curse words, can you?
You cannot, unless you hide them on a diagonal and the editor is lazy. I would never
sneaky.
Do such a thing, of course.
He's winking at us right now.
Never. Yeah. That is false. Character assassination
look
here.
Look for puzzles by Tyler. There's bad words in them.
So, but that must be like a fun thing in the crossword community, right? Like the little Easter eggs, or it's like...
I joke. Those really don't come up very often. Just puzzle construction is hard enough. I mean,
right.
One of the reasons I really like contributing to The Onion, I'm one of 8 people that makes The Onion's weekly crossword, so I'm in there every 2 months or so, is we can get away with... Not so much on the grid, and you know, we definitely don't overdo it, but in the clues, there's definitely a lot of...
Irreverent.
We can get away with some PG-13 stuff, at least. Right, so it's a lot more fun that way. And you'll see a lot of the same thing in some alt-weeklies run a crossword, and that'll have some PG-13 material as well. And those are fun to do sometimes.
What was probably your proudest answer or clue ever?
The clue that sticks out, I mean, cluing tends to me, a lot of constructors really like it. I really don't. I see it as kind of a nuisance because I finished the grid, I've done the hard part, and now it's like, oh, now I got 78 clues to write, or 76, or however many words are in my puzzle. Particularly if you're writing a harder puzzle, you want to get creative and challenging, so it's going to challenge the solvers, but still be fair, and they'll have a nice little moment when they get it, rather than just saying, oh, I guess that's it, okay. But one I wrote was, it's 8 letters, and my clue was bars for a cell.
Bars for a cell.
S-E-L-L? C-E-L-L.
C-E-L-L.
Bars for a cell.
8 letters.
Membrane?
Yeah, I was going to say, membrane or... Yeah.
Well, there is a question mark on it.
Oh, okay.
So there's some wordplay as afoot in this little cleverness here.
A-N-E. Membrane is 8. I'm going to go with membrane. I like that.
It's also wrong.
No. It's not clever. It's not clever enough. It has to be...
What? It is. It's the thing that goes around a cell.
Around a cell.
Bar. Yeah. It has bars to be something like a pub.
Yeah, or a pub. A me bar.
Oh, my God.
No made-up words in puzzles.
Yeah.
Okay, give it to us.
All right, well, bars for a cell, of course, your mind immediately goes to prison because those are, you know, prison bars, but that's not all what you want. The answer is actually ringtone, as in bars of music that are on your cell phone.
Ah, ringtone.
So that's smart.
That's probably the best one I've written in some time.
That. Yeah.
That's all I have written down. So
the one I remember the most from Tyler is the whole theme of the puzzle is the long words. They're kind of like sayings, but you have to add an extra letter in front of the two words. So they're pairings. They're like blank and blank, and you have to add another letter. And I think the clue was something like being annoying in the magic forum ? And it was trick trolling. Like rickrolling and trick
that's
trolling.
So many levels going on there.
Oh, I was so happy when I solved it. I was so happy.
You must be an internet person to get that
I mean, that was obviously for The Onion. That's the sort of thing I don't think would really fly in the New York Times or another conventional venue because, you know, maybe the average New York Times reader doesn't really know what rickrolling is. But
right.
I think the average Onion reader is perhaps more likely to get that.
That's good. I mean, you must, when you're coming up with these, you must just randomly have some clues that come to you, you know, in the shower or on the train. You're like, oh, I got to save that for a puzzle or something, right?
From time to time. I've been having those thoughts lately more with cryptic crossword clues, which is another altogether different beast of a puzzle. And that clues in that puzzle, are their answers are clued two ways. Each clue is two halves, basically. There's the normal kind of conventional crossword clue, and it's kind of welded together with a second clue that uses wordplay. But it's all kind of crunched together into a phrase that makes sense on the whole. And you just kind of figure out the dividing point and what order they're in.
Wow.
Like, each step is a puzzle, yeah.
If you get an email from me, in my signature I have, bank tellers beginning to come back for me. And that's a cryptic crossword clue for my name, Tyler. Because bank is rely. Teller's beginning is T. Beginning of teller. And then coming back, rely T reversed is Tyler. And then me is just the normal portion of the clue.
Oh my God, that's so many
levels. That's so time intensive to generate. Yeah.
If you're I've never made an entire cryptic crossword. It's just really, really hard to clue well.
Wow. Okay, so Tyler, I know you have prepared a quick crossword clue quiz. Oh, that was good alliteration.
Ooh, nice. Yeah.
Write that down.
And yay, this way I can play too.
Okay, all right. So I'm kind of presenting these in sets, and you'll kind of see where I'm going with this.
All right, hopefully.
So crossword ease is a quick primer here. They're words that you may not encounter very much in real life, but you have to know them to be good at crosswords because they have very handy letter combinations. They're short vowels, common consonants, that sort of thing. So here we go. Blank SSO, Canadian gas brand.
Is it SO?
It is, ESSO. Blank SSO, blank Buco, veal dish.
Also.
Yes, correct. Yeah. A lot of if you're doing a lot of crosswords, you'll find that a lot of these have several letters in common.
Right,
if you
right.
can't differentiate between them in your head, then you might have a difficult time. Here's another pair. Blank GEE, author James.
Aggie, A-G?
Yes, it is an A, correct. And blank GEE, a curved molding.
Oh, I see.
Oh, wait, oops. Now I'm...
Take a guess. It's not going to be like a Q, so you're...
It's an O?
It is an O. OG, yes.
OG. Oh, I don't know that. A curved molding, like architectural?
Yeah, it's S-shaped, yes. It's an architectural.
O-G-E-E.
Yes, that one's very handy.
That's a good one.
All right, how about this one? O blank O-E, a double reed instrument.
Oboe.
Yes,
that's correct. That comes in all the time.
That it does. And it's one you might encounter in real life, but this one maybe not so much. O blank O-E, an Indian tribe of Nebraska and Oklahoma.
Oh, darn it. I was about to say Ohlone, but... No.
I would just be guessing if I guessed.
I would just put
a random letter and hope I was right.
Well, that's why you have the crossing, right?
Olo?
It is not an L, sorry.
Oho?
Nope, sorry. Okay. It is a T, the Oto tribe. And you sometimes see that without the E, so it's very handy.
Oto.
Yeah. And this one you really want to get straight in your head because you'll see why. Blank R-A-L, a disappearing C.
Ural?
Ah, yeah. See, that's the trap.
Oh. So it's not Ural.
It's not Ural.
Oh, that's what I was going to say.
A disappearing C.
That one's an A, the Aral C.
Yeah.
And then, of course, blank R-A-L, the Eurasian mountain range.
Ural,
there's
yeah!
Ural.
Where is the Aral C? Is that...
I think it's... I'm not sure about that.
It's on Google.
The exact
Google
location is typically too long for a crossword clue. I mean, that's the fact people like to use that it's shrinking. So that's kind of an interesting fact that.
So I better go look now before it's gone.
All right, let's try this trio now. Okay. The next three are all going to be E blank N E.
All right.
And these are all very handy in crosswords.
E blank N E.
Yes.
Okay.
A German article.
Eine.
Yes. I E I N E. Same pattern. A sea eagle.
E-E-R-N-E?
That's it. Ern, yes. Ern. That's another one that's frequently spelled out the E, just E-R-N sometimes.
Oh, that's a good one. Like, bird. Turn and earn.
Turn and earn, both very common.
Scrabble word.
Absolutely. And this the last member of the trio, one of the quintessential examples of crossword E's, is an E-blank-N-E, an Anglo-Saxon laborer. If you don't solve crosswords, it's not likely you know this one. Because I've literally never seen it in my life outside of crosswords.
Whoa.
Pass.
No shot? Okay.
No.
It's Esne. E-S-N-E. That is.
E-S-N-E.
And you can see how that would be, it's four letters, very common letters.
Yeah.
You can stick it in like the bottom row of a crossword and it's all nice letters.
It's like the most common letters, yeah.
Right.
But modern instructors do try to avoid that. They're like, oh, no one really, that's.
The thing. Obviously these are really handy as word fillers, but are there a lot of crossword creators who try to stray from, I wouldn't say cheating, but like this common
stuff? Words that you only see in that venue.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The philosophy behind modern crosswords is they really should reflect as much as possible just how people speak. So like a word like Esne or something might be in the dictionary, but you don't really want to use it, whereas a nice word that a lot of people are using but isn't in the dictionary would be perfectly good for a crossword because it's just a nice fun thing to see in a grid where it hasn't been there before. In fact, if you're making a themeless puzzle, which is a wide open puzzle which doesn't have a theme, it has lots of chunky white space and lots of long answers to compensate and typically very hard clues, sometimes those will get started like at one across or somewhere else with a word that or a phrase that has never been in crosswords before. And it might contain a Q or a Z or something as a bonus, because those are always fun to work in. You don't want E's and S's and R's just flooding the entire grid.
It's almost like unfun in a way.
How about a set of eight here to finish things off?
Ooh,
All right. Okay. All of these are blank RA. I'll start with an easy one here. A block of time.
I think that's era.
Pretty much everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. Blank la la, a refrain from a song.
Oh.
Tra la la.
Tra la la, yes. That's lyricist Gershwin.
Ira.
Ira's correct. Two cups.
And one girl?
No, you're thinking along the right lines.
I just thought of it.
Let's see here. Blank pro nobis, which means pray for us.
Oh, Oh, I've heard this in the Latin phrase list before. Pra.
It's not pra.
Is it ara? A-R?
It's not an A, sorry.
What is it?
It is aura.
Aura.
And of course, you'll also see man blank mouse. And the reason they don't say, are you a man blank mouse, is because A is in the clue. So a lot of times you'll just see the ellipsis man blank mouse.
It'll be
a little, two-letter partial there.
Or A.
Let's see. A married Malaga woman, for short.
Malaga.
Oh, Senora.
Senora, which is abbreviated SRA.
SRA.
Extremely handy.
Nice, nice, nice.
Group that's packing. Another abbreviation here.
NRA.
NRA.
Oh, nice.
I was going to say bra.
That works too.
Nice. NRA.
Maybe we can put them next
that's
to each other.
That's not an abbreviation, though. That's
And I think the last one I have on the list here is Coach Parsegian of the aforementioned Notre Dame.
Era.
Era is correct. That's the ARA.
ARA.
And I believe it's also a constellation.
Very.
Yeah.
That was good. Cool. I love that. That was good.
So
lots
handy.
More where that
yeah.
came from.
Yeah.
Man.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
I actually learned a lot of words through crosswords. The ones I always will always carry with me is a tarn, T-A-R-N,
oh, yes.
uh-huh. which is a mountain lake, and obi, which is the belt.
Oh,
and a kimono.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
I know
Absolutely.
That. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That shows up so much.
Not to be confused with the Off-Broadway award, the obi.
The obi.
O-B-I-E.
Yeah.
O-B-I-E.
And certainly not to be confused with Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But it is spelled the same
yes,
way.
Yes, it is.
So blank Wan. Yeah, you'll see that from time to time.
Or the club Obi-Wan from the Indiana Jones movie.
What?
Yeah.
That I've never
in
seen.
In the second movie. So what is that? Temple of Doom, right?
Yeah.
So when
in
it
the
opens,
Asian club?
Yeah, in Shanghai. The name of the club is the Club Obi-Wan. And that was kind of their little in-joke.
Cool. Well, let's take a quick break from all the word nerdery here. And let's share a quick trick of memorizing some stuff. We got our today's mnemonic will
Woo!
Help you
yeah.
memorize the biological classification taxonomy order. And most people are familiar with genus and species, right? Like Homo erectus. But what about all the other ones above genus?
Yeah.
Daniel Fite wrote in, and this is something that he learned from TV Funhouse.
And what are they? Yeah. You're going to give us what they are
yes.
first. Okay.
So they are from large to small. We have kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species.
Right.
And you can add one more for subspecies, but that's easy enough to remember. So Daniel suggested something that he learned from TV Funhouse is a little bit racy, which is, please come over for gay sex.
And, clutch my pearls.
Ooh,
but that leaves out the kitty K.
That does leave the K. So I modified it in the spirit of Hollywood gossip these days. Kim Kardashian and Kanye West had a tryst of some sort.
Oh, boy.
And so, I modified it, adding the kingdom in front. So it's Kanye, please come over for great sex.
So I wonder what the portmanteau there is. Kimye.
Kimye.
Yeah.
Like Kanye needs one more thing to go to his head is that he's got people all over the nation memorizing Kanye, please come over for great sex.
And there are a lot of other mnemonics floating here and there, including there's one which is King Philip chases old fat Girl Scouts.
I like that,
that
one.
That one's funny.
I like that
featuring
one.
Chris Hansen.
Exactly.
You could
what
tell
are you
that
doing here, King Philip?
Yeah.
I'm Chris Hansen from Dateline.
Don't run.
Sit down.
I just want to chat.
Here. So you're like Girl Scout cookies, do you?
She said she was going to get some lemonade. That's all I'm here for.
Just wanted some Samoas.
Some tagalongs. So.
That's good. I could never remember that one. I always remember Kingdom and then Genus and Species.
Yeah,
and it was always, yeah.
I know all of them. I just don't know them in order. So, we have two mnemonic for you all to choose from. Kanye, please come over for great sex, or King Philip chases old fat Girl Scouts.
Yeah,
equally disturbing.
Yeah, all very disturbing. It's good imagery.
Not endorsed by either Kanye West or the Girl Scouts of America.
Please don't
or
sue
King
us.
Philip.
Or King Philip. Well, he's dead.
He's a state, yeah.
All right, let's jump back into our word topic. Wouldn't have gagged you with spoon, my own nature love. Never really heard you speak the way it's on would be up. Funny how the little college girls go language grew up. Funny how the other private schools is no hopper club. And I want to ask everybody for their favorite weird word and etymology. Mm. I mean, Dana has a whole bunch. We've seen from episode one, she introduced us to scrumping. What are some of other words you enjoy?
Katzenjammer has nice. To do with being hungover. It's like a...
Wait. Katzenjammer?
Yeah.
Like the Katzenjammer kids?
Yeah. It has to do
like, with... Like, are they cats in pajamas?
Oh, that's a good image. It kind of relates to that.
So cats
and apostrophe jammers.
Yeah,
that's a good band name.
Nice. No, all one word, right?
It is cats, a band cats name. Cats and jammer. Cats and jammer. Yeah, one word. It's like cats, as in cats, and then jammer is like a loud howling noise, and it's basically an idiom for being hungover. Like the cats are.
Can you use it in a sentence?
I woke up cats and jammer.
I woke up at a cats and jammer after partying with the Mandelbros last night.
What was in that fractal, man?
Man, dude, that stuff was recursive. So nerdy. Oh my god. My favorite, I have two favorite words, and one of them was kind of boring, but I really enjoyed the sounds of words that starts with B and U.
Mm.
So my two favorite words of all time, just because they sound funny, is bungalow and budgie, as in the bird.
Those are good.
So a bungalow is, you know, a type of house, and actually derived from India, and it was supposed to mean a kind of like a hovel or like a hut. Mm-hmm. But then it became like, oh, it sounds so exotic. Let's start naming with all the British, you know, presence in India. Like, let's name our houses with large verandas bungalows.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And before it was Bengali, like a house that is in Bengali style.
In the Bengali style.
Mm-hmm. And so it's bungalow.
Ah, I like that.
Yeah.
It does definitely sounds better than hut.
Or hovel.
Hovel.
Yeah.
Unless you're calling a football play. Bungalow one.
Bungalow two. Dude, that's too long, man.
We go back to hovel. I also like certain words just because of the way they sound. And I remember in in school in our vocabulary quizzes, we learned lugubrious. That's one of my favorite words. So learning lugubrious, which is just, you know, mournful or morose. And it was just like we had a little challenge among my friends to see if we could work that into sentences without people laughing, and of course you can't. lugubrious, I looked it up. The etymology is from Latin lugubris, from luger, meaning to mourn.
It sounds like something you would describe a toothpaste.
Yeah, it does. I love the words that have the G and the B. Lugubrious. The yeah. Stop being so lugubrious.
4 to 5 dentists are mournful.
What about you, Tyler?
I'm going to bring to you, if you haven't heard it yet, this is Will Shortz's favorite word. Will Shortz being the crossword editor of the New York Times. And he always says this is his favorite word. I'm going to pass it on here. The word is eucalagon.
Oh.
That's U-C-A-L-E-G-O-N, and that was the name of an elder of Troy, whose house was set ablaze during the sacking of Troy, and now it means the ultra-useful term, a neighbor whose house is on fire.
Oh, sure, nice. Sure. Not whose house has been set on fire.
Right? On fire. So that's more general. Okay. It's easier to use.
The conflagration is sufficient.
So it's the person.
Yes.
You're describing the person who's house.
It sounds like a bath gel.
Eucalagon.
Eucalagon, take me away. I have a gross word. I found a very awesome word.
Go
I
need on.
A, it's changed
we
my
like
life.
We like gross
word.
Things. All right.
It's called snarge.
That snarge. Has to be a discharge of some kind.
He was the little character on Thundercats, right? Snarge?
Snarf.
Oh,
snarf. Snarf.
You got a little snarge right here.
Yeah.
Okay. So snarge is what happens when a plane and a bird come together.
In not so harmonious terms, I trust.
It's the bird smoothie part.
Oh my god.
Snarge. Oh, dear. So I'm guessing, I'm just going to guess this word was named by pilots and not by the birds.
Well, it was named by people who work in museums and, like, have to prepare the birds for display. Oh. Like, they just call it snarge. Everybody knows what it is, and they talk about
snarge. Is it a portmanteau word?
Smoothie and...
Nasty.
Wait, no, what do you mean prepare for display? What is there left to display after a bird hits a plane?
Oh, so the airplane people got it from the museum people, and I think, like, when they're taxiderming the birds, all the
squishy stuff,
snarge.
Yeah.
Now, does this include beaks or no? Those thrown clear.
Snafu and discharge, snarge. Nice.
That's good. I like it. That is good.
Wow, that is pretty gross. So, two episodes ago in our inventions show, we named Thomas Edison to be the a-hole of the episode. And today we have another a-hole of the episode. And Colin, since you're a master of talking about a-holes.
Thanks.
Colin is very nice.
I try to put a nice spin on everybody's story.
You're very neutral about it.
Yeah.
We're the ones who are overreacting.
Yeah. Obviously.
He's like, oh, he just happened to, like, kill all the people in the village.
You know? That can happen to anybody.
As you do. So
we've all done that.
So who's our a-hole of the episode?
Well, you know, so I want to talk about Noah Webster because it seemed very appropriate for a word episode. So, you know, we all know Webster, certainly from Webster's Dictionary. His name is, and now the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, big part of our lives. Kind of a jerk. He, you know, he was a very driven, passionate man. He was active really in a period after we were really trying to forge, like, an American identity. So that was, like, his main goal was, like, America deserves its own identity, its own language, and really trying to separate from British. And, you know, there were a lot of other people like that, like, you know, Mark Twain and Benjamin Franklin. I mean, there were a lot of, you know, it was an admirable goal, but he was just kind of a jerk. I have this quote here from the wonderful Bill Bryson again. I'll just start off with this quote. Noah Webster was, by all accounts, a severe, correct, humorless, religious, temperate man who was not easy to like, even by other severe, religious, temperate, humorless people. A provincial school teacher and not very successful lawyer, he was short, pale, smug, and boastful.
Ooh.
So that's
wow. I'm free of those things.
a lot of bad words all strung.
That seems to be sort of the general tone of what people have to say about him. Yeah, I mean, he was not a nice guy. He definitely believed that that English spelling had to be shortened and simplified for America. Before he came along, probably the most famous dictionary was British Samuel Johnson's mm-hmm. Dictionary of English. But yeah, there's no doubt that the Webster Dictionary was by far biggest thing to come along in American spelling and school teaching. You know, there had been a lot of spelling books before that, but he came out with his, and originally in 1788. You know, one of the problems is that he appears to have just stolen liberally from other people, and he would just copy things wholesale and put them into his spelling book under, you know, this is my creation. He claimed
some people.
He claimed to invent the word demoralize. He claimed to invent appreciation and ascertainable, which
lively words,
great words. But they all seem to be in the language for hundreds of years before he came along is the problem. Yeah, he apparently...
It's like almost like a charlatan. He's like fooling all the...
I think he really was into self-aggrandizement.
he said, was just a jerk.
He said he could speak 23 languages, but apparently he couldn't.
He made up 14 of them.
Some of them were. Right.
Websterian.
Yeah. Yeah.
Websteries.
Yeah, you know, I mean, one of the things, you know, that he really tried to do is simplify spellings and pronunciations, which was good in a way. He wanted to...
Standardization.
Yeah. Standardization. He was one of the first proponents of taking out the U, you know, in a lot of the previous British spelling words. Right,
Favorite.
So it's his fault. Yeah.
Color, flavor, you know, favor, things like that, which I think was a good decision. But, you know, he also was responsible for taking out the I. So we say aluminum in America. Mm-hmm. British speakers will say aluminium. And it's not just pronounced differently. They spell it differently. They spell it with an I. And it makes a lot more sense when you think about potassium, barium, beryllium, aluminium. It's a lot more consistent.
That's so random that he chose that one thing.
He didn't like it. And so, you know,
I love foil. I'm going to take the eye out. I'm going to keep all these so other eyes.
That would be fall.
Oh.
Aluminum fall.
You know what? You get bored, you find artistry where you can.
Bored being B-O-U-R-D, of course.
Yeah. Well, bored. Not if your webs are to be you out.
He had some really strange pronunciations he proposed. He said that we should pronounce deaf, deef, nature as nater. Beauty.
Ralph Nature.
I know this will make Karen laugh. He said beauty should be pronounced booty. For volume was volume. And he insisted that what we call Greenwich and Thames be pronounced exactly as they're written.
Greenwich
and Thames. Yes. So
makes it easier to read.
He was quirky. You know, again, like the whole rule we have about splitting infinitives, you know, to boldly go, things like that, you know, that there's supposedly you're not allowed to say that. You know, he was one of the proponents against that just because he didn't like it. There's no rule for it, but his reasoning was you can't do it in Latin, so you can't do it in English.
Oh, there is no rule?
There is no rule. You can split infinitives all to your heart's content.
People shame you when you do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to split the hell out of some infinitives later.
He was a big proponent of rules for the sake of rules because he liked them.
He just sounds like kind of I wouldn't say he's an awful person, but he sounds kind of miserable.
I wouldn't say he was necessarily an a-hole, but he was persnickety for sure.
Sounds like he might be on the spectrum.
Yeah, you know, you might be right.
If you look up persnickety in the dictionary.
Yeah, it's got his own picture there.
That would be awesome. He should own it.
He was an agitator. He wanted to get Congress to pass a law requiring simplified spelling to be the rule. That if you violated laws of simplified spelling, you could be
thrown in jail
or subject to fines.
Where do you draw the line? I mean, maybe he would like text speak now too. Oh, like pull out the vowels.
Well, that's the thing. It's like he was awfully inconsistent in some ways. He was, as I say, he was a really religious guy. He wrote his own his own censored version of the Bible.
Censored version.
But they all did. Jefferson did too, right?
So in Webster's version of the Bible, Onan doesn't spill his seed, he frustrates his purpose.
That is the best euphemism.
What are you doing in there, Jimmy? Oh, I'm frustrating my purpose. Go away. If you frustrate your purpose, you're going blind.
What's another one?
I guess in this Bible, he also referred to testicles as peculiar members.
Oh.
And he apparently removed every mention of the female reproductive process. Women didn't have wombs, nothing. He just made no mention.
They're Barbie dolls.
Just don't even worry about it.
He definitely did a lot for the language, despite being kind of prickly. And, you know, I think that the greatest irony of it all is that he wasn't really smart enough to make any money off of it. He didn't make the royalties. He sold the rights to his dictionary outright. And so, you know, what we call the Merriam-Webster today has nothing to do with him whatsoever. Like the businessman, they essentially bought his name rights from his grandnephew, I believe, a descendant of his.
Should have gotten a biz dev guy.
Merriam is rolling in it.
So he didn't have a collaborator at all.
He did not have a collaborator. Yeah, well, I mean, he certainly did have collaborators and people that he stole from. I mean, it's kind of telling.
That's not really collaborator.
Quote unquote collaborator. Special thanks to.
They don't know they're collaborating.
But certainly lots of editors and co-authors. So yeah.
Man, all right. It's the end of the show, and we have one more final quiz segment, and kind of in the spirit of everything. This quiz, well, the skill of translation is a very difficult task. So it's not just getting the words right. You know, a lot of times you need the localization to get the context right. Nonetheless, nothing makes us giggle more than oddly, not badly, oddly translated things.
Oh, yes.
And so here I have a movie title translation quiz.
I like this.
And you have to identify the American or English movie by their strange literal translation from another country and another language. You'll be able to figure it out, deduce.
All right.
So it's not all out of left field. All right, let's start with something easy. Buzz in. This is from Argentina. And it's Vaseline.
Vaseline. Oh. Colin? Is it Grease?
Correct. Oh, it is Grease. Called Vaseline, starring John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John in Vaseline.
I want to see if they made it in that weird Grease font, you know, like if they had to spell out Vaseline.
The product placement must have cost a fortune. Yeah.
So I guess Grease Lightning would be Vaseline Lightning. Go Vaseline Lightning.
Yeah. Coconut. Lose that scansion there.
All right. This one is from Mexico. It's called Pigs and Diamonds.
Pigs in diamonds? Or
Pigs and diamonds.
Mexico.
Huh.
It's a British film.
Oh.
Colin?
Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels?
Close, but no.
Oh, the other one.
Tyler.
Would it be Snatch then?
The correct, other one, right? Snatch.
Oh, okay. What?
Oh, hence the expression, as greedy as a pig.
Pigs, because pigs also ate corpses in that movie.
It's explained in detail in the film.
All right. This one is from Israel, and it's The Eighth Passenger 3.
Sounds like a math problem.
Colin?
Passenger 57?
No. 3 denotes the number of movie in a franchise.
Oh, The Eighth Passenger 3.
What is 7 passengers? Or 8 passengers?
Is it like one of the horror movies, maybe?
It counts as horror.
Final Destination?
Incorrect. It is Aliens 3.
Oh.
I guess The Eighth Passenger would be the Alien.
Stowaway, yeah.
Okay, this one is from Italy. Please do not touch the old women. Tyler?
Cocoon?
Incorrect. It's a musical. It is The Producers.
Oh.
I guess name of Mel Brooks musical.
Right, that's yes.
Probably what I would have said.
Okay, and let's do from Japan. I'm drunk and you're a prostitute.
Could be anything.
Pretty Woman?
Incorrect. Ah. Colin?
Leaving Las Vegas?
Correct.
Nice.
Which, a lot of these
so charming.
Very matter of fact.
It is. It's very direct.
Like, much like Pretty Woman was, I'm rich and you're a prostitute.
And the last one is a little bit hard to figure out, but I'm sure you guys will get there. It's in Chinese. It's Excitement 1995.
Excitement
1995. One of the top movies on IMDb.
I think we need more hints.
It is. I'm just going to say it. It is Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, what?
Excitement.
I was going to say that.
I was going to say that too.
It doesn't make any sense.
So, I mean, the funny thing is that this one I left for last because I grew up knowing this. I grew up with Excitement 1995, thinking that's the name. Think back on it. It is really hard to localize Shawshank Redemption into Chinese.
Sure.
I guess you can do like Breakaway from Prison or some sort of that. But like, it's just, I think they're trying to market the movie as kind of like an epic and less of a...
They're like, you should just see it. Don't even worry about what it's called.
It's exciting. It's exciting it came out this year.
It's got sand and Morgan Freeman. Go see it.
Yeah. And it's got poop.
lots of
miles of poop. All right, and that is the last question, and that is our show.
All right.
Thank you guys for joining me today. Thank you, Tyler.
What a joy.
Expert, and thank you guys, the listeners, for listening. Hopefully now you have some good ammo for solving that next crossword puzzle in the newspaper. And we're on iTunes, and we're on Zune Marketplace, and we're also on our site, which is goodjobbrain.com. So, thank you, everybody.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Calling all trivia nerds, Brittany here, and I host the Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast with my best friend, Meredith. Is your next car ride looking like a snooze fest? We've got the cure. 3 rounds of awesome trivia every week. Harry Potter, Disney, science, sports, you name it. No more silent car troubles. The Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast. Connect, laugh, and learn with your kids, big and small. New episodes every week wherever you get your podcasts. Search for the Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast.